You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And just like always, I have another very special guest on my show. But this time, a little bit more nervous than usual. Sure, I've had some guests before that made me nervous, but this time it's different. Not only is this big man who could stretch the floor as good as anyone here to talk to me today, but in my research, I also found out that he has his own podcast. I just hope I'm up to his standards, number one. And somewhere along the line in his show, he doesn't try to turn the tables on me and take over the mic. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Crossover, Nicola Melli.
Hi, Joe. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the presentation. But don't worry, my podcast is over. So don't worry about it. I'm not going to steal your job. Don't worry.
It's over. What happened to it?
Well, actually, it was a very lucky situation because I was in the bubble in Orlando with the New Orleans Pelicans. And it was such a unique occasion that I just, you know, decided to try to bring the Italian fans in this bubble. And I was also very lucky because back then, let's say the Italian community was made of six people, me included, and all other five people were in the bubble. So it was super easy, you know, I was just calling them and we had just to talk about our experiences. Plus, there were three players, me included, one assistant coach, one vice assistant coach in the NBA, and one guy from the NBPA. So it was, you know, we could have all the point of view of the bubble, and it actually went very good, unexpectedly, but it went very, very good.
In between me, you doing this one with me and me doing the one I did with Luigi D'Antoni when he was, I think he was drunk, to be honest with you, because he just come off the beach.
No, it's Gigi. Gigi's like that. It's not Gigi. It's simply Gigi.
But between that, you guys were on an Instagram thing that popped up on my feed. It's like, Nicola Melli and Luigi D'Antoni are on live. So I jumped in and you bastards didn't even like say hello to me, man. Like I was just like, I'm like, come on, these are my boys.
Joe, I'm sorry. We had so many viewers. We just lost you. I'm joking. I'm just joking. No, it was funny. That was fun too. Honestly, we tried to do something during the lockdown, during the tough moment we were going through. And we didn't come up with any new idea. We just decided to go live. Gigi and I always had a special connection, mostly making jokes and stuff like that. So we just tried to spend an hour with on the Instagram during the lockdown, 1 hour a week, and it worked out pretty well. We had some fun, and we're sorry we didn't say hi, Joe.
Hey, between you and I and whoever else wants to listen to this podcast, he told me a little thing about, should I mention to you something about the President's Cup?
Oh, gee. You know what's the funny part? You know? No, that's the funny thing. So okay, long story short, I joined Fenerbahce. First official game was the President Cup, basically the Super Cup everywhere
else. Wait,
he
told me to ask you, before you explain anything, he told me to ask you if you won a President's Cup or not.
Of course, I was on the roster. Of course. Definitely. But wait a second. And so I just got there. Coach, the team was made of 14, 15 players. Coach has to choose 12 players. He left me out because, you know, I just joined the team. I basically didn't practice with the team and blah, blah, blah. And the team happens to win the game against Bambi. It was one game, one and done, and that's it. And, you know, they gave me also the small cup. You know, I went there, got the cup and blah, 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 everything. I put the cup in the kitchen so everybody could say it. They could see it. And so Gigi, every time was coming to my house, my apartment in Istanbul, was making fun of me displaying the cup. And I said, listen, I want the cup. I put it whatever I want. I want it. No, you were not on the roster. And this, so on and so on. Then this year we play in Fenerbahce. We go there. They give me this very nice picture of me with the trophy I won with Fenerbahce.
With the President's Cup.
No, there's not the Presidential Cup. No. And this was the first thing Gigi checked as soon as the game was over. He said, hey, there is no cup. I said, no, I cannot believe it. There was no cup.
I love it. I hit up Gigi last night when I was finishing up my interview. I'm like, Gigi, I need anything. I need anything on him, man. Anything good.
Of course, Gigi comes up with the President's Cup. Of course.
Hey, man, obviously, you know, if I got in touch with people, I did a lot of research on you. I found out a whole bunch of things. But I think, like, to me, like, the coolest thing that I've seen between, you know, Wikipedia, looking around all the place, and Instagram was the picture of your mom, like, you know, in volleyball position, man. And you were like, who knew that one day I would turn out to be an Olympian like my mom? And, like, dude, that was just, like, even, like, saying it to you now, it gives me the chills and, like, how cool that must be.
It was unbelievable. For me, the biggest dream was to take part of the Olympics, and I was so lucky this summer to be able to do that. Not many people can say that two members of the same family took part of the Olympics. We are able to do that. And my ultimate goal is to take part of the 2028 Olympic Games in Los Angeles, because my mom played in 1984 in Los Angeles.
Exactly.
So that will be, you know, a wonderful closure. But I was very lucky this summer to take part of the Olympic. I just watched a video talking to about the Olympics, and it gave me goosebumps. It was an incredible experience.
When I saw the picture, of course I knew about your mom before I started everything, but when I went through your Instagram, I saw it. I'm like, man, that's really cool. You can see that, but until someone actually says it, you don't get to feel what they feel, you know? And to me, it's like, I've done so many of these interviews, and it's always been like, well, I followed in my dad's footsteps, or my uncle played college basketball, and I did this, and it's always a different person. But man, it's like your mom was an Olympian. That tops up just about everything.
Being Olympian is something special. Being able to say that also that you're like your mom is even more special. So really, I think I didn't realize it 100% yet. It will take some time to do it. But, you know, it's just such an honor to be an Olympian. And for me, as my mother's son, I'm just so proud to be able to say that I'm a little bit like my mom.
You know, when it's hard for people that speak well, can't get the words out correctly, you know how much it actually means to you, you know?
Yeah, really. It's very difficult to put this in words, because it's something so, so big and so special that nothing I can say can really explain what I felt, what I feel, and what I will feel. So thinking about this.
Did you play volleyball? Did you follow in her footsteps at all?
Well, there was one summer that I wanted to stop playing basketball to go play beach volley. Beach volley was my summer sport.
I can imagine you and Luigi on the same team too, with your shirts all.
Oh, geez, no, please. Not everything with Gigi, please, please. Not everything with Gigi. No, but that was my, I would say, my summer love for sport. And I wanted to stop playing basketball and go play beach volley. Then my parents sit me down and say, listen, there are not so many opportunities to play beach volley in Reggio Emilia, because you don't know Reggio Emilia, but it's really foggy in winter, no seaside, no, not nothing. And so nothing, I decided to keep playing basketball.
You keep getting closer, and I see, is this a cut on your lip?
Yeah, rough game, rough domestic league game on Sunday.
Really?
We won, luckily, yes. But you know, this is part of the job. This is part of the job.
Yeah, it's not part of my job anymore.
not anymore, but it was.
No, I'm done with that part, man. Hey, did you play soccer?
No, I'm horrible playing soccer.
Horrible, right?
Horrible. I like to watch it sometimes, but horrible.
Who's your team?
Inter. That's not even a question, Joe. If you make some research, you don't need.
No.
I know.
I know you know. I know who your team is, and you know who they play tonight, right?
Real. Yeah. If they win, they're first. So I mean, let's see. It's a derby with Chacho. It's a derby with Chacho in the team.
You guys haven't gone to Madrid yet this year, so I was thinking about laying like a little dinner bet the night before the game.
No, I'm good. I need to get ready for the next game.
You don't want me to take you out in Madrid the night before a game. I don't blame you. Coach Messina might not like that.
I mean, otherwise, Coach is gonna be a little bit mad, I would say.
What was your influence to play ball? With having a mother play volleyball, and I mean, just your size, was it? What you were talented at?
Well, my father played basketball, and basketball actually, my hometown is basically the main sport. Maybe back then when I was a kid, it was the second sport, because soccer was in the first division in Serie A. But now, you know, they're struggling a little bit. Now, basketball is definitely the main sport in Reggio Emilia.
Most people who are listening to this podcast probably have no idea that was one of the best areas of basketball back in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, Reggio Emilia is like half an hour away from Bologna.
Right.
Bologna, you know, is called the basket city in Italy, because they had Virtus and Fortitudo. And we in Reggio Emilia has a very long tradition, mostly with the youth program. And I was lucky to be born there, to grow up there.
And it was honestly, I was always the tallest guy in the classroom and school and everything. It was a very natural and easy decision.
When I was growing up, Italy dominated. I mean, whenever anybody in the States talked about European basketball, it wasn't European, it was Italian. Bob McAdoo was like the first American NBA player that went over to play in Milan.
Yeah, I know, of course, who Bob McAdoo is. It's, you know, now it's a little bit different, but back then, I know Italy was an amazing place to play.
Those 4 months I spent in Caserta, man, it was crazy, but I loved it.
I mean, okay, you spent also 4 months in a crazy place. You chose the really like the top of the top.
Hey, man, like I don't know if you ever see me play, but you know that I like to shoot the ball a little bit. Can you imagine? I played with Nando Gentili, Enzo Esposito, Oscar Schmidt. I mean, Sergio Daradoni, I was like...
You need to play defense there. You didn't see a lot of balls there.
Nico, I never played defense. Forget that.
I mean, but with them, they were shooting also.
Oscar, oh, like, my God. You know, Oscar came up to me my first day when I just got off the plane. He's like, you see two balls? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I need more than this. I started laughing.
Welcome to Caserta.
I started laughing. And he was like, I'm very serious. I was like, all right, man, don't worry about it. Hey, let's get into you now. Like the stuff that I did is that you started with your club team, which is a great team for like farm clubs and for kids and everything. But I saw that like most of the time you were hurt a lot early on in your career, early on in your life. Because we're talking about 13, 14, 15 years old.
Yeah. So I started playing in second division in Reggio Emilia when I was 16. And those were also my last 3 years of high school. And I played there for 3 years. And actually, I had a serious injury per year, every year. I hurt my ankle my first year. I broke my ACL my second year. I broke my shoulder my third year. So Jeez. That was actually pretty rough, I would say. But, you know, this is part of the job. It's part of my career. I believe those injuries taught me a lot and also taught me very early that I had to take care of my body. If I wanted to, you know, want to play a long and hopefully successful career. And then nothing. I had a great experience at Reggio. Then I moved to Milan. Then a short period, I went to Pesaro. And luckily there, you know, injuries were not anymore a big part of my career. I had another couple of injuries, a couple of surgeries. But, I mean, overall, I was, after that, a little bit luckier, I would say.
What was your second year? You hurt your knee, too. Didn't you blow out your knee?
Yeah, in Reggio Emilia, I broke my ACL. Yeah, I broke my ACL. It was the last game before Christmas. So, and we were first in the league, and, you know, we were going, you know, we were dreaming about going in first division. I was playing a lot. I was playing good. And the week before, I had probably my best game in those 3 years in Reggio Emilia, and the week after 52 seconds, I broke my knee in the game. It was, you know, I was 17 years old back then. It was heartbreaking.
You're one of these guys that I feel like when I was in the States back in college that played all 4 years of college and like they've been around forever because everybody knows you. They've been around with you forever. And when I looked, I'm like, he's only 30? Are you serious? He seems like he's a lot older than that because he's been around so much. But when you have an injury at that age, mentally, I mean, you haven't made it yet, so you don't really have people waiting for you when you come back from injury most of the time. How hard is that mentally to come back from? Because at this point, well, you're 16, 17. Like I said, if you were 21, 22 and you were playing really well, they'd have a doctor with you every day of the, you know, like get them back. But you could easily been forgotten about.
Well, for me, actually, was always and is always something with myself. It's something I always challenge myself. And also back then it was the same. So I broke my knee. I think I got surgery on the 7th of January, something like that. And my birthday is on the 26th of January. So I start setting myself goals very like short in period in time. And so my goal was to be able to walk on my birthday. You know, it's not something huge. But if you think about it in a rehab, like it's like 2 weeks, you need to walk in 2 weeks. And I did it. And so from then on and on and on. And honestly, I don't wanna sound arrogant or cocky. I never thought about what other people were thinking or if any scout or any coaches or any, I don't know, we're thinking, oh, he's done. I never thought about that. My goal was to go back on the court as soon as possible. It took me exactly 4 months to go back on the court. My second practice, somebody hit me straight on the knee, boom, straight on the knee. And I could, you know, keep running and jumping. So I said, okay, I'm healthy. I'm ready to go. That was my crush test, I would say. And honestly, I never had that thought. Maybe because I was so young, you know, maybe that helped me too. And back then there was no social media, not a lot. Like I wasn't reading so many newspapers, so I couldn't read all the comments and all this stuff. And I don't know, I was just, they told me the minimum it takes to come back is 4 months. So for me, 4 months was the maximum, wasn't the minimum. I say 4 months is 4 months, and 4 months was. And honestly, I wasn't putting on my shoulders any other pressure than, you know, go back and play, be healthy. And that's what I did.
How do you guys deal with the social media in today's world? I saw an interview with you where you said sometimes you lay down in bed at night and you turn on social media, you know, you look through the news and whatever. Like, man, I just thank God it wasn't around.
Well, to me is very, very simple, I would say. First of all, I don't post a lot about my private life. I have a today 11 month old daughter, and I don't post
pictures. That's coming up later, don't worry.
Yeah, I'm not posting picture of her on social media, because I don't wanna, it's my private life. And my closest friends, my family, they know about that. You know, they don't need me to post that on social media. Even though I respect people doing that, it's just my decision. Second is, I always say that my profile, my social, Instagram, Twitter, is not a democracy. It's not a democracy. You cannot write or say whatever you want. So if you insult me, if you write something bad about me or my teammate, my family, or whatever, I block you right away. You have no second chance. Like, because if this happened on the street, if it happened somewhere in a restaurant, I'm not saying I'm going to punch you, but we are going to get in a fight. We're going to discuss.
On social media, there'll be an altercation of some sort.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So on social media, and mostly, you know who I am, like, because you see my name, and okay, there is this blue check and whatever. Many times the people that are writing bad stuff, their name, I don't know, blue point 737567. I mean, it's super easy to do that, you know? And maybe the same guy,
as we say, sitting at home in his mom's basement.
It can be also grown. I don't care. Maybe the same guy, in like, he sees me on the street 2 hours later and asks me for a picture. But this is it's part of life. I don't care. I'm not discussing how social media work. I'm just saying, I don't deal with the bad stuff of that. Like, I just block people. I just cancel bad comments. I don't want that. And how I use social media is basically Twitter. I use it to read news, because I believe it's very quick. You know, the news, sometimes news are on Twitter before they happen. Like, boom. And on Instagram is a way to keep contact with friends, with family, with former teammates, you know, and, you know, having pictures, it's way easier, you know, to see, to understand what they did, what they're doing. But I'm really cool. I'm not super a lot on social media.
It just has to be so hard to, like, just read something. And sometimes, like, I would imagine, like, even when the press said something about me or about anybody else, it's like you kind of look at it like, shit, they're kind of right.
Personally, I don't read newspaper. I don't read basketball. I don't. Many times people say, oh, I read your interview. I rarely read, I don't read newspaper.
Nobody really reads anymore. It takes too long.
No, it's not about that. I just, you know, I always believe if somebody has to tell me something, he will come to my face and tell me. And I don't want to sound arrogant or anything. I don't need the comment of a fan telling me, oh, you're not shooting well or you're not playing good defense. This is my coach's job. This is myself. Like, this is my job when I rewatch my games, when I practice. I don't need that. Like, I understand them doing that because I might do the same watching soccer or whatever. I never write something like that on social media, but maybe with a friend watching TV, I say, oh, you should play better defense. That's it. But I don't need that. So I'm not looking for that. I'm not going on newspaper and read what the journalists say about me. If this journalist knows me and wants to tell me something special, he comes to me and tell me. This is my my philosophy, I would say.
But you'll be turning 31 now, I guess, in the new year. But it's so different. Like when back in my day, 30 years old was kind of like that almost like that cutoff moment. You know, it's like, uh-oh, he's turning 30. Let's keep an eye on his production. But I mean, Gigi was messing around with me about you. He told me a bunch of different things, but he also told me.
Why you call Gigi? Why did you call Gigi? Explain me that. Why? Teammates I had, Gigi.
Because I'm a professional. I'm a professional. I have to do my job. You know?
You did the right thing.
I could have called Kyle. He would have told me a few things too, but I know Gigi's more fun, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Mostly when it comes to me, yes.
Especially if you catch Gigi at like 11:30 at night. He's even a lot more fun, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
But I guess what I'm going at, he did say like that you're the consummate professional about taking care of yourself, your body, your mind and everything else. And that's what it, today's game is like between nutrition, doctors, the physios, the yoga. I mean, what's one of your keys to stay in top form at your age? And especially since you have that history of injuries from before, I mean, it's even that much more important to you.
Yeah, well, actually I kind of got forced to take care of my body because with all the injuries I had, you have to do it. And mostly, the rhythm is so intense now that we play so many games, and it was the same also in the NBA. You need to take care of your body. And this is a everyday job, and you cannot, you know, you can give yourself a couple break during the season when, you know, there are no games. But if you have games, you cannot relax. And I'm not saying I'm going in every day and doing super heavy weightlifting, or I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you need to take care of your body and you have to do it. And there are so many ways to do it, and can be some extra exercises, as can be a extra hour with the physiotherapist or the ice bucket, or eat a little bit better than what you do, and or sleep. I'm not a huge napper in the afternoon, but for me, like my 8 hours a night, 7-8 hours a night, like are a must. I need to have those. And I understood very early in my career that you need to do this every day, and it will eventually pay off. And if you don't do it, it will come back at you. Maybe not immediately, but later it will come. And I want to play as long as possible. I told you, my goal is to be in the Olympics 2028. So it's still 7 years. So if I want to do that, I need to take care of my body.
You got loaned out to the club that you're in now back in 2010. And again, I go back to your age. I guess it's a constant theme for me as I went through this. I mean, you were only 20 years old when you were in Milan your first time.
Yeah, 19, 20, yeah, something like that. Yeah, 19.
It's like, you know, you see the 19 and 20 year olds that are coming up now, and they have such promise, and there's so much like hope and hype and everything else for those guys. But like, looking at your numbers, looking at your trajectory over the years, you were just kind of like, it was like you were taking, instead of taking like three steps and jumping up the stairs as fast as you can, you were taking a step at a time. Was that planned, or was that part of the teams that you were on?
Well, actually, I wanted to take a 5 steps jump.
Right? You wanted to take the giant leap, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, my history is like that. What changed my career was for sure going to Bamberg with Coach Trinchieri, then Fenerbahce. But you know, that decision to go and in Germany and play for Bamberg, for Andrea, that was the decision. I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that decision.
Was your decision made because of him? Was it made because it was a team that was in the EuroLeague more consistently? What was your main decision there?
No, my decision was that I wanted to play. I want to prove mostly to myself that I could be something else than 3-and-D power forward. That was my role in my 5 years in Milan. And I wanted to prove myself that I knew I could do something different. I could do something more. And I wanted to prove it. You know, the only way to show other people to do it, that you can do it, is to prove it. And Bamberg was the perfect situation. My contract with Milano was expired, but Daniele Baiesi came and talked to me and said, this is how we see you. This is what we want to do. It's a 2 years project. This is it. But very clear, like, they gave me this 4, 5, 6 pages document. And, you know, I said, okay. And Andrea was known also back in Italy with Cantu to play his power forward as an extra point guard with Martin Lunen or Mitzel also. And I said, it's the perfect fit. Let's try it. And it worked out well, I would say. Those 2 years in Bamberg were special, definitely special.
I know having a conversation with that guy is pretty cool, man. But, like, what's it like playing for him? Because he's mistaken, I think, by a lot of people as being cocky, arrogant, whatever. But, man, I love him. I just think he's great.
Well, Andrea knows definitely that he's a good basketball coach. He knows that. And his collar, glasses, and his scarves can give as you said, maybe a cocky, arrogant image of himself. But what I found, and I have a special relationship with Andrea, also because we were speaking the same language, you know, abroad in Germany. There was a little Italian community with Daniele Baiesi, Andrea, Sandro Beccandino, the strength conditioning coach, and Federico Perego, the assistant coach. And, you know, speaking the same language, you know, also you create, it's easier to create a connection. What I found was just, you know, a great basketball mind coach. He taught me a lot. He gave me freedom, responsibilities. He appreciated what I was able and I'm able to do. And I mean, and it's easy to play for him. Like, once you understand what he wants, it's easy. It's easy because it's very clear and he understands basketball. So also when he explains it to you, like, hardly is wrong. And it's easier to play, like, you know what I'm talking about. It's easier to play for a coach that knows what he's talking about. And Andrea never played basketball, but still, he can see stuff that sometimes only basketball players can see. And when this happened, it's easy to go on the court.
One of the things I like to talk to players about is the moment, you know, and the moment where you've said, damn, I could play this game, you know, like, just that, all I need is an opportunity. Your couple last years in Milan before you extended a year, I believe, after you finished the contract, and there were some good seasons, and then you extended an extra year and it went a little bit south until you went to Germany. And then when you get to Germany, and like you said, is it all about opportunity? Is it all about being in the right place at the right time with the right mix of people? Is it about being prepared for that moment? Like, when you were in Milan and you were averaging 5 points a game, you know, 5 points in the EuroLeague, whatever, did you feel deep down like, I'm just not in the right situation? Or you just like, I can't wait to get out, you know, I can't wait to find the right place?
Well, my thought in my first 5 years in Milan was always to regain my space on the court, you know, because every year I was starting as a backup of the four, and my goal was to finish the year as the starting four. And sometimes happened, but every year I was, you know, going back. And what happened is after my fourth year, they offered me an extension. It was basically a 1+1, but the plus was very, I would say, tricky for me. Like, there was no plus. Like, it was, okay, if it works well, we will keep you. If it works, if it doesn't work, we let you go. But there was no option for me, basically. So I said, you know what? Let's do just 1 year. You know, and this is something not a lot of players do it. Like, just 1 year. I say, okay, I take the risk. It's not a problem. I was coming from a surgery this summer, and I signed 1 year coming out of a surgery. But not because I wanted out. I just want, if you want me there, you need to believe in me, you know, you really need to want me. And then nothing. Then the year went how it went. It wasn't an easy year that year. And then Bamberg came. I didn't leave because of what I had here or what I didn't have here. I left for what I wanted to find, or for what Bamberg offered me. You know, my thought was, oh, I'm tired about Milan. I'm going everywhere else. No, I went to Bamberg because for what Bamberg was, for what Daniele Baiesi told me, for what Andrea Trinchieri told me. Not because Milan was bad for me. No, it was because of Bamberg.
Like you were saying, you just excelled there. And I mean, it was to see your numbers explode in those two. Were there any NBA teams before you went to Bamberg, like, knocking on the door? You're a tall guy that could shoot from the outside.
Well, they were mostly in my draft years, but not like after when I played the 2 years in Bamberg. And actually, not being drafted, also was a good thing for me after, because I was kind of free of, you know, all the rights and the pick rights and all that stuff. And but of course, the 2 years in Bamberg helped me a lot about, you know, how the basketball world was looking at me.
You go from MVP of the month in November 2015-16, you round 11 MVP the next year, all EuroLeague second team, which all EuroLeague second team is not only is it a huge accomplishment, and I'm not saying this in a disrespect for a bad way, but coming from Rossi,
I wasn't expecting that at all, because we didn't make the playoff. So usually the top 10 players are in the playoffs, something like that, mostly of the time. So being part of that selection, not being part of the playoff, you know, was a big thing. It, you know, but really all that happened because what I found in Bamberg. Really, the 2 years in Bamberg were special. Like the teams I had in Bamberg were, I'm really amazing. Like that place was special, is special for me.
It's so interesting sometimes when you see, let's say, for example, and I, this is obviously hypothetically speaking, we're going back in time, and Bamberg doesn't happen to you. And you go to, you can say Unix, or you can go to like a team in Turkey, for example, anywhere, you know? And you don't have the same chemistry with the coach and the players and everything else. I mean, your whole career could be defined by those 2 years. I mean, we both know, you and I both know, and everybody who's played this game knows that those 2 years don't define your career because you did so much beforehand to get there. But if you didn't jump on that ladder and climb up that ladder, you might still be, you know, not where you are today.
I experienced that in my 2 years in the NBA. You need to work a lot. You need to, you know, put your maximum effort, but you need to be also a little bit lucky. You need to be in the right position at the right time. You need to be, I would say, you need to want it and to look for it. So not give up, but you need to be lucky. Like I was lucky that in Bamberg, that was happening. I was lucky that Bamberg won the championship the year before. Otherwise, they were playing the Euro Cup, you know? So, and they won the championship with the basically the last shot. Like it was super, I won't say random because they deserve it, but unexpected at least. So many things goes together, you know, but this is part of a career, you know, like, I mean, so many things can, sliding doors, you know, so many things can change, so many, you know, so many things can be changed from just one action. Luckily, Bamberg was the right action, you know, to take back then.
I always bring this up for people that watch these interviews so that they realize that, yeah, you know, you have to work hard. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, the only thing is what I always tell the kids that I talk to. It's like, you know, if you work harder than everybody else, you're not guaranteed to make it. But if you don't work hard, you're guaranteed you're not going to make it.
100%. Absolutely. But that on the other hand, like, if I could go back, I would do the same decision. I would pick the same decision because I was so happy in Bamberg. It was so, as I said it already, special. But at the same time, you don't know what could have happened if I, you know, if I didn't go to Bamberg. You know, maybe something better even happened. You don't know. You don't know. I'm glad I did that experience. I told you, if I could go back, I would do the same decision. But there are so many ways to get to one point that is not, you know, it's not a recipe. It's not the recipe to make the chocolate cake. There are so many possibilities. Just keep looking, work hard. And don't give up.
Can't turn on a GPS for what might happen.
No, definitely.
Actually, I write all this stuff down and I prepare myself pretty well. I mean, that's probably why your podcast didn't last very long. You didn't prepare enough. But anyway.
No, I was preparing myself a lot. I saw my notes the other day. I was like, Jesus Christ. How many questions I wanted to ask to Bailey, Bellinelli? I mean, I had like 50 questions. I was like, what?
It's hard, man, because then, of course, you don't get the half of them. You know what I mean? But... And I, like I said, I didn't write this one down, but literally you went from A to Z in like a literal aspect. You went from Andrea to Selko in Fenerbahce, A to Z.
Well, actually, Andrea and Zeliko, I believe they are very similar, to be honest.
Their minds are extremely similar.
Yes. I would say that Andrea is a little bit more... he likes to create a little bit more, I would say. Zeliko goes straight to the point. Like, Zeliko is like, bam. like Zelico is not is Zelico is like, guys, these are our first three set plays of the game. If you execute it well, we're gonna score. And this happened every time, every game. It doesn't matter if it was a Turkish League game, doesn't matter if it was against CSKA. It was every time. And if we were missing, because we were making mistakes. I never seen something like that. It was like, these are our first three set plays. Bam, bam, bam. And if we play these set plays, they're gonna do this. And they were doing that. I was like, how is possible? I was shocked. And so Zelico goes straight to the point. He tells you this, the thing straight to your face. You know that with him, there is not a lot of messing around. If he has to tell you something, he's gonna tell you. And this personally is something I really appreciate, because you know where he stands. And you know he stands with you, because he always said, guys, you are my team. You know, that was funny. So when we were losing the game, he said, guys, you are my team, but I don't need you to lose. So I don't need you to lose. So this is the door. If you want to keep playing like this, you can go. Because to lose, I can do it also without you. I want to win with you. And, you know, when a coach says something like this to you, it makes you feel, you know, you have to take responsibility and be accountable.
It's hard, though, to be a professional player and have to deal with him. You know, it's like, man, he can make your life difficult when he really wants to. I mean, we've seen him in the timeouts that you, Luigi, okay, not told me.
but the thing is, yeah, okay, maybe that wasn't the best thing to see. Even though I'm sure if you ask Gigi about his relationship with Zelico, he would just talk super highly about him. And so what you know is if you're able to take out some of those stuff and you take, you know, he really stands on your side. You know, he's on your side. And
the bottom line is you realize, and it took me a while after 3 years with him, you realize that he's got your back and everything.
Everything. And everything means everything. It means in the game, like if the referee calls you a wrong foul, but it means also, you know, when you have to deal for extension, you know, he got your back. Say, hey, do this. I will fight. You want this money? Is whatever. Or, you know, he's there for you. But he wants your maximum effort. He wants to win. And he needs that you want to win too. You know, this. And I mean, with him, you know that you have to win. There is no other recipe. Like, you need to win. And I mean, as simple as that.
I think that was the respect that Zelko and I had for each other. We knew that each one of us, even though we would bang heads sometimes, we knew each one of us just wanted, we wanted nothing more than to kick someone's ass.
He's so competitive.
I'll tell you, my favorite story is we played against Olympiacos in the final, in the championship game of the EuroLeague. And we went through the like you said, the first three plays, offensively and defensively, what we were going to do. And they had Eddie Johnson, who was like one of the best three-point shooters of all time at that time. And they had Volkov. I was covering Volkov, and this other guy, Isma Santos, was covering Eddie Johnson. So the whole play was like when, you know, they run the fast break where Johnson runs the wing, sets a screen across for Fasulas, and then he comes up on the pick from Volkov, right? And so we're going up for the jump ball to start the game, and Isma Santos comes to me, he's like, don't hedge out on Eddie Johnson. Don't worry, I'm going to go straight through the pick. I'm going to crush Volkov in the chest, and he'll never set another pick on me again the rest of the night. And I looked at him, I said, Isma, are you crazy? I said, if I don't hedge out and Eddie Johnson scores a three, Zelko's going to pull me out of the championship game, and he won't put me back in. And that's how in tuned you were to his philosophies and the way he coached, you know? It was a great relationship once you got used to his ways.
But the other thing is, like, I really appreciate about him is this, he really enjoys, like, also the outside moment, like, the moment off the court, you know? Like, there are two Zelico, like, the one on the court and the one off the court. And with Zelico, I think I talked to him, like, in 2 years, four times, five times, maybe, like, first, when I got there, hi, nice to meet you, Zelico, Nicolò, this one, first time. End of first year, we're going to see each other next year. Yes, okay, have a nice summer. And like, this is it, like, really.
Did you talk to him after you won the President's Cup?
No, yeah, he told me congratulations. No, I'm joking. And so, And that, like, so we were not like, I mean, we were going out like for some celebration, like we celebrate Gigi's birthday. Of course, we were talking, but I'm saying there was not. And then he drove 1,000 kilometers to be at my wedding. You know what I mean? Like amazing. You know what? Like, so it's something, it goes beyond basketball. Huge respect. And as I said about Bamberg, and I'm because back then when I went to Fenerbahce, I had the chance to go to the NBA, to the Atlanta Hawks, and I turned down that offer to go to Fenerbahce. I mean, I'm happy that I did that. I took that decision because I was able to experience that organization, that kind of life, that kind of pressure, be part of that group, special group there too, be coached from Zeliko for 2 years and live in Istanbul, amazing city.
You guys just look like you had such a cool team, man.
We had, okay, second year it was, I mean, I think we had the best record in EuroLeague during regular season.
Yeah, that was the year you had, everybody got hurt in the final four.
Oh, gee, don't talk about that. Don't talk about that.
I know.
Please. It's still open one wound. But I mean, I'm glad I did that experience. I'm a lucky person, definitely.
How, I mean, you've been there. You got there the year after Fenner won the EuroLeague the year before. I knew this wasn't going to be a good conversation for you, but and then you lost. You know, you lost the finals.
Really, we need to talk about this.
Yeah, that's why you're on the crossover, man. Because we talk about all of it. We just can't talk about all your successful stuff. It's for people to realize. Because I always say this to people. I'm 56 now, and I've been retired more than twice as much as I played. Just to give you an idea, I still feel young, you know what I mean? But I've been retired for twice as long as I actually played.
Are you that old, Joe?
Yeah, I'm that old, Nico. Yeah, yeah. I was in Caserta in 87, I think, or 88, something like that.
88.
Yeah, you weren't even born yet.
88, nope.
Your mom was still playing volleyball at that time.
probably, yes, definitely.
I remember all the great parts. I remember all the championships. I remember all the titles. I remember all the fun. But I'm forced to remember them. I can't forget the losses. It's the one thing, even at 56, it's like the, you know, me losing a fifth game here in Madrid, that a Spanish team had never lost a fifth game in their home court in ACB history. It was us.
Of course, it's always you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it always happens to you.
Yeah, we lost to Barcelona in Paris in the Final Four the year after we won, you know, and you had to play that infamous third and fourth place game. There's so many highs and the lows are so low, man. How, it's just so difficult, isn't it?
Well, I tell you this, the weekend that we had in Belgrade for that Final Four.
And that year was so set up for Zeljko to be number 10.
No, really, don't make me think about it. And that's probably the best weekend of my career. I tell you this. Even though we lost the final, it was my first Final Four. There were so many, I experienced so many emotions during those 2 days. It was just special. And as you said, it was set up for Zeljko. I sometimes think if we would have won that, it would have been just too perfect. You know what I mean?
Too good to
be
true.
Too perfect. Too good to be true. I mean, me finally playing good. I mean, in the final, come on, really? That cannot be. Me scoring baskets in the final, that was too much.
You had 28 in that game, didn't you?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. I don't know if it's 27 or 20. I don't remember.
It was 28. Don't worry. That's what I'm here for.
20. Now. Okay. 28. And I mean, we lost. And then after it was, I was crushed, to be honest. I'm still, if I think about it, it still hurt. It still hurt. And it will hurt forever.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you're 30. Give yourself another 26 years. You'll still feel the way I do.
No. I'm going to feel it forever. For sure. 100%. But this is part of a sport career. The only thing that is not good is that we don't appreciate enough when we win instead of when we lose. Like when we lose, we suffer way more than what we appreciate when we win. And this is supposed to be not like that.
But in the long run, I think I had this discussion with Coach Itudis a couple of weeks ago. That's what makes you better, though.
Yes, still, yes, you're right.
It makes you hungrier. It makes you want more.
Yes, yeah, okay. You need to be hungry, but at the same time, this is another thing. I don't know. I need to talk about this with Zeliko, but this is another thing. Zeliko was winning, he was really enjoying it. It didn't matter if it was the Turkish Cup. I didn't see him winning the EuroLeague, unfortunately, but or it was the Championship or the President Cup. He was really enjoying it. Like, sometimes we were like winning, we won the Turkish Cup, we were happy, but you know, Turkish Cup, you know what I mean? But the year before we lost and we were devastated. We were, but so you cannot be devastated from losing and just say, oh, okay, yeah, we won. This, you know, cannot be.
It's kind of like, I'm not making a joke this time about it, but it's kind of like the President's Cup. They do the same thing here in Spain in the beginning of the season. Yeah. It's like, if you win it, you're like, yeah, we're the champs. And if you lose it, like, well, that cup really didn't mean anything anyways. Let's get on with the season.
Yeah, so this is wrong. This is wrong because you work so hard to play, to compete, to win, that when you win, you need to, you know, give yourself a break sometimes. You know, like, I mean, you won. You did it. And but yes, after the final year, I was, and I will be forever, you know, this will be always
they're painful, pain. They're painful.
Yeah,
they're
definitely painful. But as I said, those 2 days, 3 days in Belgrade were unbelievable. I was meeting the assistant of my agent in the hotel, that we were, you know, we know each other since I'm a kid, and we were hugging each other for no reason, you know, in the lobby. Because it was the first final four for him too, you know, with me. And for me, so many memories, so many thoughts, so many things. It was so nice, you know. The trophy would have been the cherry on top of the cake, but the cake is still there.
You know what? As I'm sitting here talking to you, and of course we've said hello in passing, and we've shook hands here and there, but talking to you. You know, even though you're 30, you might be old, you might be young, whatever, but you talk like you're still like 13 years old, man. And it's just like all, you talk with such enthusiasm about everything, that every experience that you've had, that it's really refreshing to see somebody enjoy it so much. Because some people take this for granted, man, while they have it. Don't take it for granted, because when it's gone, it's gone, you know?
No, I mean, I never consider it much. Like, I don't believe I ever work one day of my life. This is true. Like, I don't consider this as a job. Yes, it's something that allows me to, you know, buy food, buy a nice car or an apartment or whatever, or go on a nice vacation. But this is not, it's hard for me when people ask me, what's your job, to say I'm a basketball player. It's very hard for me because I don't consider this as a job. Not because I don't put effort in it, not because it doesn't take away a lot of time, of my time. It's because it's what I love, is my passion, is I don't know, it really, I'm not saying this to look smart or to look good. It's really, is what I thought, I think. And mostly now with this kind of schedule in EuroLeague, you need to have fun. You need to enjoy the moment. You need to enjoy the time with your team. And I'm lucky to be on this, with this group, because it's an amazing group we have in Milan. And we enjoy when we go on the road trips. You have to do it. Otherwise, I mean, you lose 2-3 games in a row, you start thinking what we're doing here. But if you enjoy, if you rely on your teammates, it's way easier.
Tell me that, to jump before we jump back to Milan, I'm going to take you to the NBA for a little bit. Just kind of like summarize all of it, the experience. Because when you went over, you know, I kind of followed you a little bit on Instagram. I saw some things, and man, it was cool to like see someone who was just excited. You know, it was like so much excitement to go. And then of course you've been, you know, you're in a couple different teams, and the typical up and downs that the NBA has. But what's your personal feeling about the business, not only the sport, but about the business? Because NBA turns into be a business.
Well, to me, it was a great experience, even though I didn't basically had the chance to play the second year. The only thing that I wish, you know, could be different, could have been different, was that, you know, with COVID, I never had the chance to experience a normal NBA season.
You know, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because my first year we went in the bubble, you know, and of course, that being said, you know, what happened globally with COVID what we experience. Nothing. I don't want to even compare. Like, I just, you know, I spent 2 years in the NBA. Both year were not a normal season. Still, we were super lucky. We had the chance to play and to be, you know, in a safe environment and all this stuff. This is the only thing I wish could have gone different. But, you know, that being said, I mean, I'm grateful that I had the experience to play in the NBA. I can say I was an NBA player. And not everybody can say that. I had the opportunity. My first year, I think I played also decently. Second year, how it went. About the business, I mean, I play basketball because I like the game. If you ask me now what I'm going to do after my career, I don't know if I'm going to stay in basketball because I'm not really interested in everything around it. You know, like, it's very important what's around, and what NBA does is unbelievable because what they sell you, that's the perfect package. You have everything in it, and everybody makes money on the NBA. The only people paying are TV, the broadcaster, the fans, if they want to watch the games, and that's it. Because everybody who works for the NBA makes money. And so this is a perfect machine. But as you said, there is also a lot of business. Sometimes, you know, the part of the game gets a little bit lost, a little bit. But I mean, it's also normal. There are so many teams, so many games, so many flights to take, to catch. And so sometimes it's also normal that it's not lived as we do here in Europe, because in every game in Europe is do or die. And in NBA, it's not like that. And it's also why they can sell such a product. But to me, it was a great experience. I wish I could play a little bit more, that for sure, as every basketball players want to play more. But that's being said, I play in the NBA, amazing world. They run the business incredibly. But, you know, I'm also happy to be back to play in EuroLeague and, you know, super competitive competition. But I'm happy that I had the chance to play in the NBA.
When you played those couple times against Messina in San Antonio when he was assistant coach for Pop.
He wasn't there anymore.
Oh, he wasn't there? Oh, that's right. He was back here already, wasn't he?
He left. We exchanged, I think.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, because this is his third year in Milan, and so he left when he got there.
I thought you guys might have been, like, over on the other side of the ocean, like, trying to, like, you know.
No. No, we never play against each other. No.
But what's it mean to be back in your country, family? Is your wife, you said you have an 11-month-old baby. Your wife is Italian?
German.
That's why you're trying to practice your German.
Hey, you know, well, this is I met my wife in Bamberg.
That even makes it more special.
Yeah, absolutely. Bamberg will be always a special place for us. And then I asked her to follow me to Turkey and to Istanbul. She said yes, and then we got married, and then she had to follow me to the States. And, you know, it's nice. No, it's nice to be back. Honestly, this season, I still didn't have a deja vu from my past experience, because the organization is totally different. What they did here, what they built here, it's unbelievable. It's really is probably the closest thing to the NBA I've seen so far. And just a couple extra are missing, but our extras is not something that you need, you know, everything we need, we have it. And, so I'm really happy to be back. As I said before, also I'm very happy to be part of this group, because I found an incredible group. Like what I'm saying is, like, not basketball players, like as human beings, as characters, like great guys. It's fun to spend time with them. It's fun to go on a road trip with them. And I'm happy to be here. I'm really happy to be here.
Who's the practical joker in the team?
I can be a very strong candidate.
You're one of them?
Maybe, yeah. Me and, like, I think Gigi and I, we are pretty...
Can't even imagine the two of you together.
Better not. No, but it's also, you know, the season is so long. It's also nice to have a friend on the team. With you know, you can spend time with him and talk to him about, yes, also stupid stuff, but also, you know, serious stuff, and share moments with him. And so, you know, I still don't like Gigi, but I'm really happy to be on the team with him.
I love to ask this question. You said daughter, right? 11-month-old daughter?
Yeah, Matilde.
I have a 28-year-old daughter, so you won't be smiling so much in 28 years.
I know. I'm getting ready.
But look, do you feel like this sport of basketball took on a new meaning after your wife got pregnant? You guys went through the 9 months. The baby comes into your life. Do you feel like you're playing for something more than just putting a ball in the basket these days?
Yeah, well, definitely. You know, become father is something that changed your life. Not only change your routine, but it changed also the meaning you give to certain things that happen in your life. As you said, like putting the basketball in the basket has a different meaning. I'm not saying has less meaning. It's just different. It's just different. I always said that my daughter saved me last year when I was first in New Orleans and then in Dallas because I wasn't playing. But, you know, whenever I was going back home, she was there smiling at me. No matter if I played zero or I played 10 seconds, she was there.
And she doesn't have a Twitter account to write anything bad about
No,
you.
And she definitely doesn't have a Twitter account where she can say, hey, Melly, you need to shoot better threes. But, you know, this was my absolutely biggest dream, to become a father. This is my ultimate goal. And I always kind of wanted, not wanted, but, you know, I always, because probably everybody in my family are all boys, all men. And so I always thought of a baby boy, you know. But now with the daughter, I mean, I lost control about everything. She can ask me already everything now that she cannot talk. So think about it when she can talk. I'm done. I'm definitely done.
They start to control you with like hand signals and eye signals, and you know exactly what they want.
Absolutely. But it's so nice. Is every day you experience something different. You see her grow up, and you know, you go on a road and you come back after 3 days and she learned something. It's like, oh, yeah, Jesus, you lost it. But so nice. It's so nice. Also, when I was very nervous the first time she came to the game here in Milan. It was the first
game. With all the crowd and everything?
It was the first time ever, and I was nervous. I wasn't, you know, really nervous. It was a domestic league game, and I was nervous. So it's nice. It's really nice.
Imagine me being an American guy back in the late 80s and had my first child, and, like, we brought them to a game in Malaga against Madrid, and it was, like, so loud. I was like, this is going to have they're so small, it's going to break their eardrums, you know what I mean?
But then they get used, and they enjoy it.
One of the last questions I have for you about basketball is, you said you're back after 6 years, but not a landing spot. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Are you looking to go back to the NBA someday?
No, it's not that. It's not that. I don't feel that, okay, I got here and I'm... Okay, it's done. No, it's not like this. You know, as you... I wanna do stuff. I wanna win. I wanna challenge myself. I wanna challenge my teammates. I wanna challenge my team. Mostly I wanna win, and so I don't feel that, okay, I got here, I'm good. You know, no. Now we start to do stuff. You know, and this was always my mindset whenever I moved. It was in Bamberg. It was in Fenner. It was in New Orleans. Then even in Dallas. Okay, let's do it, and then let's see how long it goes. But it's not a landing spot. It's not, oh, I'm comfortable now.
How important is it for you to someday soon raise that European?
No. Let's not talk about, I don't want to even talk about this. No, you don't talk about such a thing. Mostly if you're Italian, you don't talk about such, no.
But is it a curse? I mean, come on. We know you don't touch it before you own it. We know that one.
No,
but...
this is now like this with the medal with the national team are my two biggest sport dream, and I wish one day I will be able to accomplish that, and I hope this happened, and I hope this happened with Milan.
Tell me the limited time you had in the States, like, where the hell did you find an Italian restaurant? Because you know that us Americans, we think like. We think fettuccine alfredo and all these other places.
Oh, jeez. You know how many fights I had about fettuccine alfredo and chicken parmesan? You know how many fights oh, my goodness, Joe. That was terrible.
And then people be like, no, it's chicken parmigiano. I'm like, no, it's not.
I'll tell you this story. So one of the first games on the road, we play in Phoenix. I was in New Orleans, okay? And Coach Alvin Gentry say, hey, Nick, you have to be happy because, you know, after the game, they bring catering and food and everything. We have some Italian food for you here. And I was like suspicious, you know, come on, in Phoenix, brought from a restaurant. It cannot be good. Cannot be good. And he said, yeah, yeah, we have some mac and cheese.
No, I said, not mac not, and cheese.
I said, this is not Italian food. I'm sorry, coach. I've never had it. How is possible? This is Italian food. No, no, this is not Italian food. Absolutely not. But I found a couple of good spots in New Orleans and Dallas. I found my spot. So plus my wife cooked very well.
I was gonna say anything that comes in like one of those skinny boxes that you shake it up in hot water, and that's not.
No, Joe. No, you have no idea how many times. And it's not fettuccine. It's fettuccine. And so everybody on the team, oh, we're gonna have some fettuccine. I said, no, guys, it's fettuccine. But whatever, let's move on. Which sauce? Alfredo, listen, please, something different. Ragu, let's do something different. But it was fun. That part was fun.
Yeah, my mom was Napoletana. So okay. Like every Sunday it was like, you know, we went to church, we come back, we buy the Italian bread, we bring it home, she'd make the sauce with the meatballs and the whole thing. And then I went to Caserta, you know, and I went like 4 or 5 months in Italy playing basketball. I went back home and she was like, I'll kill you, you don't eat my pasta. You know, I'm like, mom, like, it's not the same, you know?
I know. Once you taste the real one, it's hard to go back.
Hey, last question. I saw in an interview that at night, to go to bed, sometimes you listen to like political podcasts or you listen to like, you know, whatever, you put your headphones on. And I was thinking, because I do the same thing, because if I don't, man, my mind is like...
Yeah, it's incredible. It keeps working.
Yeah, I need to like always listen to things. And I was thinking, I was like, you put the headphones on. And I was telling my wife last night, she's like, why don't you put headphones on? I'm like, well, because you sleep through, like, you could sleep through an earthquake, so it's no big deal. I'm lucky, man. I don't have to, I just put the phone right next to my head, and it just keeps my mind from, like, working, like, going crazy. But in that way, you're kind of like Louise. You're all into, like, books and you know, some politics that you don't like to talk about that much, but whatever, but... You're more dynamic than just an athlete.
No, I think it's important also, like, we live in on a different level. Like, our life is so quick and we have everything, you know. We don't need to worry about what really happens in our country. Like, I live in Turkey, but I never had to worry about what Erdogan was doing, you know what I mean? Like, because they provide us everything. The team provide us everything. We didn't want...
Most but of the time, we're exempt from 95% of everything out exterior to the basketball.
Probably even more. And so I think it's important not to lose contact with reality, you know. And I always like politics. I have my ideas. I don't talk about that on social media because I believe social media is not the right platform to do that. You know, is you don't have enough time. And if somebody says something wrong, it takes him 2 seconds to say something wrong, and it takes you 5 minutes to say, you know, to explain him he's wrong, but nobody's going to listen to 5 minutes. So I don't do that on social media. I read books, but, you know, I just post what I read. I don't suggest people to read the books I'm reading, because I believe it's a free choice. And I think it's important, you know, to keep also your mind active. And it's a way always also not to think always about basketball, you know. And but I'm not a reader like Gigi. Gigi's like book. It's like Gigi's is unbeatable. But I like, you know, to have different interests and
I think Gigi just does it to try to look cool, to be honest with you. He just like
No, not really. It's okay. Sometimes I make fun about that.
With all the art and the music and the books, I'm like, come on, dude.
Well, actually, Joe, he never invites you at his place in his apartment. It's like you have no idea how many stuff he has. And it really is. How fast he reads is unbelievable. And he finished one book, he has already another one in his hand. I've never seen something like that. Really. So Gigi, you know, as I told you, I don't like him, but in this case, he's honest. He's honest.
Hey, this is it, man. It's time for your EuroLeague test.
The crossover test.
No, I know. I'm so worried. I start studying something. I'm terrible.
You got 5 questions. It goes from easiest to hardest. They ascend each question by 10 points, all right? So the question's 1 worth 10, question 2 worth 20, 3 worth 30, so forth and so on to 50.
Okay, Joe, I do apologize. I do apologize in advance for my answers. I do apologize.
Listen, you don't have that far
to
go.
Can I use my phone?
No, you can't use your phone. Of course you can't use your phone. The only two that have gone so far is Itoudis and who was it? Hezonja. And they only got 30 points. They got the first two right, then they fell off quick. So you have a chance. Our overall winner from last year was Grigonis with 70. So
yeah.
So you have a chance. You ready?
Yeah.
This should be pretty easy to start. Let's go. Question number one of the yearly test. Which teams made it to the Final Four last season?
Milano, Barcelona, Efes, and CSKA.
Bam, 10 points. See how easy that was?
No, it wasn't easy at all.
I thought you were going to say Real Madrid for sure. I don't know why.
No. Efes beat Real Madrid. I remember this. I was watching playoffs.
Question number two, we're 20 points. Who is the block shot leader of your team this season as of right now today?
This is a tricky question. Kyle Hines.
Bam. See, 20 points. You're tied for the top right now.
Let's go. I'm going for the win.
You might get it right here.
Yeah, I need to be lucky.
I think the guy who did these questions for us was on vacation the last couple of days. I don't know. He went a little easy.
I talked to him. I bribed him. I gave him $20.
Question number three, worth 30 points. Who is the EuroLeague's all-time top scorer?
Vasilis Panoulis.
Bam, there you go, my man. 60 points.
3-1-3. Can we stop here?
No, you can't stop.
No, come on.
You can't stop because I'm looking at it. There might be a possibility here. Question number four. What current player has had Šarūnas Jasikevičius as both a teammate and as a head coach?
Current player?
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a player in Zalgiris, it has to be. Current player? It has to be a player in Zalgiris. Jankūnas. Jankūnas. I would say Jankūnas.
No. God, I thought you were going to get this one, man. Kalatis.
Maimpanov. Yes, of course.
You hate yourself now because that.
Kalatis. I was sure about Kaunas. I don't know why.
Soon as you started thinking Zalgiris, I'm like, oh God, he's not going to get this. I'm not going to get
Kalatis, of course. Yes.
All right, you're at 60 points. Here's your fifth question worth 50. So you'd be all time crossover leader with this answer. What 2021-22 player has the most seasons at his current club? Those seasons do not have to be consecutive seasons.
2021, 2022, current club. One can be Yule. Give me a face, Joe. Give me a face. When I say names, just give me a little bit.
EuroLeague tells me not to make any faces.
One can be Yule. There's stuff. I need to think about all the teams. Printeris is another one. It's tough. This is tough. It's a nice question. Printeris. I will go with Printeris.
Yeah, one more though. There's two of them.
Two of them.
Yeah.
One Printeris. Am I right with Printeris?
You got that one right.
250. Okay, this is okay, but this, I mean.
And you're not getting 25 points for it either.
Why not? I got one. It's incredible.
I know you Italian guys.
I mean, I go with you.
Oh my God.
No, wait. You do that face.
You can't. You can't change at this point. But you said it earlier.
Jankūnas.
Yeah. I'm sitting here, as soon as you said, this is, I'm like, okay, he's got it now. There's no doubt he's got it now.
Jankūnas, of course, Jankūnas. Can I get 25 points? 20, I give you discount. Give me 20.
Hey, Black Friday's already passed, my man.
Yes, you're okay.
Hey, listen, number one, I want to thank you for taking the time out to spend this hour and 20 minutes with me and everybody from the crossover. Number two, I want to thank you for being, just an example for kids, for basketball players, for athletes in general. Sitting here talking to you has been just an absolute pleasure. And number three is those two headphones you got in there. Like in a couple of weeks, when you come on, stick them in your wife's ear and let her go to sleep and let her listen how good you look.
Okay.
Hey, molto grazie. Molto grazie.
Joe, thank you very much for having me on your podcast. I'm not going to restart my podcast, so don't worry. but really, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time and enjoy it.
You mentioned that you didn't know what you're going to do when your career is over, but I should be done by then, so don't worry. You won't be taking
my job. Worry. I will never be at your level, so I will never do that.
Appreciate it, my man. Have a good one.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ciao. Good luck this season. We'll see you in Madrid.
Thank you. See you then. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.